Welcome to Now. I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Manny Eck.
Breast cancer is the second most common cause of death among American women. We'll hear about efforts to reverse that trend.
When we look for cancer on a mammogram in a dense breast tissue, we're looking for a polar bear in a snowstorm. So it would be very difficult to find.
Then we'll ride along with a mobile dentist's office.
It's a different program. We go out into the community. We give back to the community.
How can a simple vitamin fight high blood pressure?
We'll hear about efforts to prevent maternal and child death.
Albert Einstein was one. So is President Obama. What is it about left-handed people?
That's all coming up on this Wednesday edition of Now.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that breast cancer is the most common cancer among American women, regardless of their ethnicity.
The CDC says that in 2010, the latest year for which stats are available, nearly 207,000 women and more than 2,000 men died from the disease.
Early detection is a key weapon against breast cancer, but sometimes standard tools don't see tumors right away.
But as Kara Pearson tells us, 3D mammograms help doctors and patients find and fight the disease.
They are all based on eucalyptus.
When Zulima Palacio discovered she had breast cancer, it was already at an advanced stage.
Even a month before it was detected, I went for a sonogram, and they told me, you're fine, go home.
Palacio is now cancer-free, but her tumors didn't show up on a standard two-dimensional mammogram. Many doctors, including Nagar Golasorky, say 2D mammography is a poor screening device.
When we look for cancer on a mammogram in a dense breast tissue, we're looking for a polar bear in a snowstorm, so it would be very difficult to find.
A few years ago, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved the use of 3D mammography. That's how Jennifer Heff's tumor was found.
It was a very small tumor. It was only an 8-millimeter tumor that couldn't be felt.
Dr. Sarah Friedewald at Lutheran General Hospital in Illinois led a study to compare the findings of 2D versus 3D mammograms in nearly 500,000 patients.
We found invasive cancers, or the cancers that we worry about, the ones that could potentially kill people, more frequently in women who had the 3D mammogram versus the women who just had the 2D mammogram. At the same time, fewer people had to come back for unnecessary testing, and which creates unnecessary anxiety.
Look at the difference between a 2D mammogram and the same image in 3D.
A mass that has irregular borders in the upper part of the breast. And this is very much typical of what a cancer looks like, hidden on the 2D mammogram, but very well seen on the 3D mammogram.
The results of this study and another recent one are striking. Both show that with 3D mammography, there's a nearly 30% increase in the overall detection rate for cancer and a 40% increase in finding invasive cancers.
I truly, truly believe that the 3D mammography is what got my cancer early and is allowing me to pretty much live my life the way I want to.
Dr. Friedewald told VOA that all women could benefit from 3D mammography and that she expects it to eventually replace the standard 2D mammograms. Her study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
You know, I've had personal experience with this because my wife had to get her annual mammogram.
Mm-hmm.
And because, because of the density of her breast tissue, standard mammograms weren't seeing everything.
Right.
So she went and got one of these 3D things. And then they looked and they said, what's that? And I'm like, oh, gosh, what do you mean, what's that?
You were there.
Well, I wasn't, but she came back home and told me and said, you know, they found something irregular.
Okay.
And then after that, they went and they said, well, we're going to do an ultrasound, you know.
Yeah.
And they did the ultrasound, and they still weren't satisfied. And so then they did an MRI. And, you know, all during this time, I'm like
freaking out.
Completely out.
Sure.
I'm like, we've only been married for 12 years. She can't die.
Well, it's scary.
It's scary,
I mean, it is really scary.
The anxiety of not knowing.
Well, people die from breast cancer, you know? Now, there's not really a history of it in her family, but they eventually did a biopsy. And they said, oh, well, it's just regular breast tissue. It's benign. It just looks abnormal.
Okay.
But they ended up putting this little titanium chip in her body so that now every mammogram she gets from now on will have that little chip that will show up. And so that's an area that they will look at just in case something develops.
So this is going to be ongoing.
Yeah. It's a kind of a, you know, it was benign, so there's no cancer cells or anything in it. But I mean, oh man, if you could read my journal from that time.
You were journaling?
I was journaling because I had to get my anxiety.
How long was the wait until the
final? It was like a month.
Oh, that's a long time.
It is. It's a
That's a lot of lack of sleep.
Well, I mean, part of it is because of doctor's offices, you know, and we can't get you in and you know, but then they did this and they did that and you know, she's looking at me and I'm like, I don't know.
I can't help you.
I can't help.
Yeah.
You know, and you feel, I mean, I don't I mean, obviously for women this is
Well, you're trying to convince that everything was okay at least, or she had to support you.
Well,
this
it was kind of back and forth because I was there for her, supporting her emotionally, but you know, like taking her to the appointments and going there and all that kind
of
stuff.
But on the inside, you were
on the inside,
scared out of your mind.
I was a freaking typhoon, man. I was just like, oh God, you know, and you finally come to the point where you're kind of like, well, regardless of what the result is, we are going to fight for her life.
Together.
Together.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was so happy when it came back, it's nothing. I was like, those are the greatest words I have heard in a long time, because it's scary.
It is.
It is really scary. And men get it, too.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised to hear that. I've never heard anything about that.
Yeah, it's rarer in men, obviously, because, you know, you've got a couple thousand versus 200,000, so it's like 1% of the cases.
So now, are you going to get a 3D mammogram test?
I don't get a mammogram, no. Thank you very much.
Just checking, you know?
I try to go to the gym. I'm working on getting rid of them. No. But the thing, well, it's true. But the thing is, you know, this is something that is a tool where physicians can fight the disease, they can find it, and early detection is a big deal. The girl I took to the prom in high school.
Oh, my God, we're going back to prom?
Yeah, last year, she fought this whole battle. She had to have chemotherapy, and she had, you know, mastectomies and all this other kind of stuff. And see, she's got two daughters, which really concerns me.
Yeah, they're more exposed to it.
Well, because there is a genetic kind of predisposition that's passed down in women in families. And
scary.
It is scary. You know, if you would like to see video of this story, or if you have any questions or comments, log on to our website. That's www.voanews.com.
And if you have any questions or comments, visit our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NowVOAShow. A little party never killed nobody. So we're going to dance until we drop. A little party never killed nobody. Right here, right now, is all we get. Skeetin' ba-da-pop. Sometimes poor families have to choose between paying to visit the dentist or paying for food.
This hard choice leaves many poor children prone to dental problems, which can eventually affect their overall health.
Here in Washington, D.C., a big blue van offers some help.
Faisal Masri rode along when the big blue dental van visited underprivileged neighborhoods. Faith Labadis narrates the story.
Oh, what a big girl you are. Can you sit in that big blue chair? It's all for you.
The van, with two dental chairs and a team of oral health providers, stops at 30 locations in the Washington area each month.
And then this is going to go back a little bit. See, you're going for a ride.
While most kids don't think going to the dentist is fun, registered dental hygienist Holly Graham tries her best to make the visit as pleasant as possible.
We start very slow with them so that we can get them on board and to, you know, get to know us. Once they come back, they're typically more friendly and they're ready to go and they open without being asked.
Graham leads the clinic's oral health team.
It's a different program. We go out into the community. We give back to the community.
That makes medical care affordable, says Dr. Marcy White, director of mobile programs for Children's National Health System. But more importantly, it makes it accessible.
Transportation is a huge barrier to access to care. Our mobile units that we have go out in the community. We like to go where the kids are, and typically that's in their communities, at their homes, in their schools. So we bring those units so that families don't have to worry about taking three or four buses to get to us. In addition to the dental services that we also offer medical services, we offer psychiatric services, and then social wraparound services for our families.
Mobile medical care is available for underserved communities in inner city neighborhoods and rural areas across the United States. Washington's program has been in operation for more than two decades. The dental van was introduced about 10 years ago.
Over the years, our program has grown tremendously. In 2013, we served about 1,600 patient visits. We've actually implemented electronic dental records as part of our mobile dental unit, which is so important when you have a mobile unit out there in the community to be able to access your patient's records at any time.
Dr. White hopes the program can afford to get newer units in the near future.
We actually have a unit that is about 12 years old. It has a 10-year lifespan on it, so it's feeling every bit of it right now. And it only has a two-chair operatory, so some of the newer units actually have a three-chair operatory. So I think a new unit would actually allow our team to grow, allow us to serve more schools, allow us to be in more communities.
Natalia Hitchez, a mother of three, heard about the mobile clinic from a friend a couple of years ago. She's become a regular client.
I come very often, maybe twice a year for every child. The waiting time is zero. I don't have to wait. Usually if I have an appointment by 2 o'clock, the doctor will be seeing my kids by 2:05 the most. I usually get information through the doctors, or any questions that I have, they will be answering.
The parents are the teachers to the children when we're not around, so it's very important that we educate them on oral health as well, telling them to help assist with the brushing and the products that we use and what they should be using at home.
That is the philosophy behind the service, teaching healthy oral habits early in life to prevent a lifetime of dental problems. For writer Faisal Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
To see video of this story, log on to our webpage, www.voanews.com.
And post your comments on our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And you can follow us on Twitter, at Now VOA Show.
Everybody get up.
Manny, do you take vitamins or supplements? You're a healthy person. You said you worked out. Do you take vitamins?
Yes, I do. Have you ever heard of gummy bear vitamins?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. I get a whole jar from Costco.
Yeah.
And it has vitamin A, B, C, D, and E. So I'm all covered.
Wow. So you're all caught up.
I am.
I have to take several supplements during the day because I don't get enough. I don't eat enough fish.
Okay.
And so I take fish oil and I take magnesium and calcium and all that. And then I go to the doctor and the doctor's like, well, we don't know about taking calcium. It could make your blood vessels, you know, too stiff. I'm like, wait a minute. Can y'all please decide? Because I'm not sure. You said take calcium because
really?
My bones will get thin. But now you're telling me not to take calcium because my veins will get hard. What? But I still take it. I don't worry about that. I'm like, look, you know, it can't hurt.
Maybe,
you know,
a small dosage, perhaps, in
your
case?
Well, it's, you know, I take the recommended dosage according to the bottle.
Okay.
So, you know, and I do take a vitamin D supplement, even though I love milk and cheese, you know.
Do you get sun much?
I try to stay out of the sun because I'm fair-skinned.
Okay, you'll burn.
Well, I'll burn.
You get melanoma instead of vitamin D.
That's right. It's like instead of high blood pressure, you will now get skin cancer.
Oh,
but,
my
you
God.
Know, there are people who are low in vitamin D, which is called the sunshine vitamin, and they do appear to be at risk for developing high blood pressure, which is also known as hypertension.
Jessica Berman found out that a new study says taking a daily vitamin D supplement could reduce the likelihood of high blood pressure, a risk factor for heart disease and diabetes.
Researchers led by University of South Australia nutritionist Alina Hooperin conducted a population study of nearly 150,000 Europeans looking at two genetic variants that reflected their vitamin D status. Investigators found people with a particular gene had more vitamin D and a reduced risk of high blood pressure.
And I think that this is a potentially very important finding, because it's likely that by avoiding vitamin D deficiency, we can also lower the risk of developing hypertension.
Hypertension, or high blood pressure, is a risk factor for heart disease and diabetes. Studies have shown that vitamin D deficiency may play a role in the development of autoimmune diseases, including multiple sclerosis. This is the first study to strongly suggest its link to hypertension. According to the Vitamin D Council, those at highest risk of not getting enough of the nutrient include people with darker skin, those who spend a lot of time indoors, people who live in northern latitude countries, seniors, pregnant women, and those who are overweight. Huppinen says blood tests for vitamin D are expensive and not routinely done. So to make sure you're getting enough vitamin D, she says spend some time outdoors.
We can be pretty confident that we don't have severe problems with vitamin D deficiency if we are exposed to some sunlight and we don't use excessive amounts of sun lotion, and also if we are consuming vitamin D fortified foods.
Such foods include salmon, wild-caught mackerel, mushrooms, cod liver oil, tuna, sardines, and dairy products such as milk, cheese, yogurt, and eggs. In addition, Huppinen says it could not hurt to take a vitamin D supplement between 400 and 1,000 international units each day. The study linking vitamin D deficiency and hypertension is published in the journal The Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
To learn more about this story, please log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And if you have any questions or comments, visit our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
We might read your comment on a future show.
The head of the U.S. Agency for International Development, Rajiv Shah, says that every day this year, 18,000 more children and 700 more mothers will survive than in 1990.
Last month marked the second anniversary of the Child and Maternal Survival Call to Action.
VOA's Mariama Diallo found out that while child and maternal health has improved, there's still a long fight ahead.
While child deaths have dropped from 12.6 million in 1990 to 6.6 million in 2012, 16,000 children and 800 mothers are dying every day, says the U.S. Agency for International Development. But Administrator Rajiv Shah says the goal of ending preventable child and maternal death is within reach. 2 years ago, USAID partnered with organizations around the world to help achieve this goal.
After the call to action, 176 countries signed a pledge to make this a priority, report on outcomes using report cards and quantitative measures of are we delivering success. We will be repositioning nearly $3 billion of investment to save an additional 500,000 child lives between now and the end of 2015.
USAID also plans $650 million in partnership awards with nearly two dozen companies to help distribute life-saving drugs like amoxicillin to 5,500 rural villages. In 2015, the UN Millennium Development Goals and its targets, including improving child and maternal health, will expire. Anita Sharma is with the UN program called Every Woman, Every Child. She spoke to VOA via Skype.
We're working with a number of partners to identify what those issue areas are and then bringing in kind of the strategic assets that each organization can help. Now, we won't be there in 2015, but we certainly know the unfinished agenda of the MDGs will continue far beyond 2015.
Despite the resurgence of conflicts in some areas, both Sharma and Shah say progress is being made.
We are helping to train community health workers so that they know how to help women and children gain access to medicines when they need them. We're helping to distribute misoprostol, which helps to prevent postpartum or post-birth bleeding amongst women, and that is still the number one cause of maternal death in South Sudan.
Sharma says money is one of the challenges, but the political will to prioritize health is also needed. Shah points to India as a good example.
They have focused their efforts on ending child death on 132 districts that have highest rates of under five child mortality. They've moved resources from middle-income communities to poor communities in order to protect and save more children.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
To see video of this story, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And let us know what you think by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NowVOAShow.
Tomorrow way too far away, and we can't get back yesterday. But we young right now, we got right now, so get up right now. Cause all we got is right now.
Are you a lefty or not?
No, I'm a right-handed person.
Okay.
Why? Are you right-handed or are you a lefty?
I'm right-handed.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, there are several U.S. presidents who are left-handed, including Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton, and even current President Barack Obama.
You know, those three presidents, I find them to be very charismatic. Do you think being left-handed has something to do with that?
I don't know. I heard that there was a statement that said left-handed people are the only ones that are in their right mind. Well, it's because, you know, your hand determination is based upon which hemisphere of your brain is dominant. Hmm. So if you're right-handed, you're left brain dominant.
But generally, they're more creative, right?
Yeah, I think so. It used to be thought, though, that left-handed people were somehow cursed or evil.
But Laura Bowman found out that modern-day left-handers are often high achievers.
John Barker has been left-handed for 73 years, and he says it's often a nuisance, like when trying to write in a three-ring binder.
See, if I'm going to write, I have to surmount this, where a right-handed person can just write.
He says that eating at a table set for right-handed people is also a pain.
You have to take your water glass over here, which I often do, and your wine glass over here. The only thing that works is the napkin.
Barker is retired now, but he had a demanding career, running the late President Lyndon Johnson's presidential campaign and serving as former President Bill Clinton's press secretary when he was governor. But he notes that a now discredited medical report really made him suffer. It said that left-handed people don't live past the age of 80.
And the report went on to say that one of the reasons is left-handed people are undependable, they're careless, they tend to put themselves in danger, they are, of course, creative, but on the other hand, they just don't live that long. So this made me very, very upset.
Barker said he set his eyes on former President George H.W. Bush, who he knew was left-handed. When Mr. Bush celebrated his birthday by jumping out of a plane at 80 and then again at 90, Barker knew he was in the clear. Other famous lefties include current U.S. President Barack Obama, Albert Einstein, and Napoleon Bonaparte. Scholars say that left-handers are more spatially aware, better at learning languages, and more superstitious. Uzo Ihekwaba is 23 years old. His parents are Nigerian. He says that being a lefty has always made him feel special.
I'd probably drop the ball if I was doing it with my right.
Uzo is proud to be a lefty, but says that some of his high school friends in Nigeria weren't.
I remember having conversations with a few of my classmates who remember as children being left-handed but were sort of forced to use their right by their elementary school teachers.
Uzo himself scores high on the creative scale. He's finished a screenplay, and he also writes songs and composes the music. He says he feels lucky that he can express himself and his left-handedness.
It always made me feel that, you know, there was something unique about me.
Oh, and that's one more thing they say about lefties, that they feel superior. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
So what about you? Are you right-handed or left-handed?
Has it made any difference in your life? How are left-handed people treated where you live?
Let us know by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And to see video of this story, log on to our webpage, www.voanews.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NowVOAShow. Thanks for joining us for this Wednesday edition of Now.
If you want to hear our show again, log on to our webpage, www.voanews.com/now.
And if you have any questions or comments, you can visit our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And you can always follow us on Twitter, at Now VOA Show.
If you want to email us, our address is voaasia@voanews.com.
Patrice Martin produces our program.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Until Monday, I'm Manny Eck.
And I'm David Byrd. Join us again for another edition of Now.